Here.
Director Garcia?
Here.
Director Gonzalez?
Here.
We have a call.
Thank you, thank you. We do have one public comment, Mark Brown. Can you come on up to the podium and say a few words? And we are officially, I'm told we're on the air even though the light's not on.
Oh, great.
So you're being televised or statewide, computerized. Yes, you're being streamed statewide right now.
Thanks, Chairman Peterson. I'm Mark Brown. I'm a West Deerfield Township trustee and came here with my friend Muhammad Salim just to view some of the proceedings. And just wanted to make a quick comment. I've been driving up to Milwaukee two or three times a week lately, and I wanted to let you know the folks at the Lake Forest Oasis are super, super, super nice people, and they deserve whatever compliment or support. I'm a general public person, so that's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. Nice comments. It's always good to hear positive feedback.
And they almost never happen from that podium, so.
Thank you, Mark. Anyone else for public comment today? I guess that's it. Thank you. We have a couple of items here. We have approval of the minutes of the regular Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting held on January 21st of 2015. Were there any comments or corrections? There being none, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Minutes are approved. There are no additional items I have. Christy LaFleur, our Executive Director, will have some additional items and presentations.
Great, thank you. Well, just a couple of points that I wanted to make. First, you know, I know that we're all familiar with the phrase going the extra mile, but I always like to take the opportunity when you hear about an exceptional story from the people who do the frontline work on the tollway, I like to highlight it as much as possible. So here today we have David Schaefer, who's very happy to be here with the spotlight shining on him from M12 out in Dixon. And, you know, we've had some, you know, significant snow events, but in particular there was a big one in early February, as you may recall. And, you know, he really, I think, exemplifies the best of the tollway employees and the dedication that so many people have who work for the Illinois Tollway. You know, by all accounts, he's the type of guy who always gives that little extra effort. And so on February 1st, during what would become the fifth biggest snowstorm in Chicago or the Chicagoland's history, David worked until 3 p.m. plowing snow. And then he went home to Amboy, which is a small farming community near Dixon. And while most of us were settling in to watch the Super Bowl and, you know, covered up in a blanket and munching on some snacks, David went back out in his personal backhoe, because the roads were closed down, right? It was the only way you could get to work, and drove in his backhoe 10 miles to make it into the M site in order to come back to work. So at 1 a.m. the next day, David was called back to work, and again, because of those weather conditions, he had to drive his backhoe in. And it's really a tremendous story. I hope I'm not getting any of those details wrong, but it's a tremendous story, and I think that is an exceptional effort for sure. I can say that I may have called in under those circumstances, but you did a great job, and all of you do such a great job of keeping our roads clear and people safe and driving, and I just wanted to thank you personally, and I know our board thanks you for all of your hard work and dedication too. So thank you very much.
May have to rent you a backhoe for an
agency assigned, a permanently assigned vehicle, backhoe, to make it out here. Yes.
I think it took over, you said over an hour. Did you go 10 miles?
Yep.
Hour and a half, something like that. Amazing.
Yeah. So very dedicated. And I know that you would agree probably that it's, you know, that's going the extra mile for sure. But I know there are stories like that in abundance of people who work for the tollway, in our customer service centers, in our maintenance division, that really do put in that extra effort to give great service to our customers and keep everybody safe. So thank you very much for that. I also wanted to let you know that one of our biggest projects, the I-90 rebuilding and widening project, the Jane Addams, is being recognized by a business group that's really a crucial partner to us in our capital program. Hostia The Hispanic Contracting, Hispanic American Construction Industry Association has nominated it as one of the capital projects to be considered for its annual award. So I know a couple of us will be attending that event later tonight, fingers crossed. But, you know, so far we've employed more than 450 construction and professional service firms on this project, of which more than 160 were DBE firms. So, you know, it's created or sustained thousands of jobs just over the last couple of years, and we know we'll be creating and sustaining more in the years to come as we're going to be wrapping up that work in 2016. So we're thrilled by that honor, and of course, there were a lot of people here who have been involved in making that project a success in our engineering department, in our diversity department, in our finance department, among others. So thank you all for your hard work, and whether we actually get the award or not, we'll know that we have a great accomplishment in our hands.
So I assume this is not going to be televised, so maybe you should let us know what happened.
Yes, morning.
Lots of pictures.
Watch your national news the next morning. I'm sure it will make Good Morning America or something. But anyway, it was
your Twitter page, right? Your Twitter feed.
There you go.
We'll tweet it. So that's all I have in terms of updates. Now I'd just like to introduce some of the presentations that we're going to have today, if that's okay. Mike Kelch is going to be giving a presentation on our debt management and debt update. I think you had asked for this, or we had talked about this maybe a couple of meetings ago. We thought it was a good time to take a step back and take a look at the entire portfolio, but also discuss some of the policies that we created around our debt management and revisit those and see if those still are things and kind of the framework that we should be managing under, or whether we should be tweaking anything at this point or revisiting something. So, Mike?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We want to spend a few minutes this morning providing a debt management update. As Christy mentioned, there are some policy positions or issues that we've discussed before, positions that we've taken that we may want to revisit at some point this year, but I also wanted to give you some background on our debt portfolio and some of the plans for 2015, and we'll be seeking your authorization on some of these items. If you recall from a couple of years ago, we really have three main areas that we've been focusing on in debt management. The first, obviously, is the successful funding of the Move Illinois capital program. The program includes about $5 billion of issuance of debt over about a 10 to 12 year period, beginning in 2013. We had estimated when we started the program that that we would be borrowing at hopefully borrowing at interest rates between 5 and 5.5%. We, I think, planned for funding at 5.5%. We also have been attempting to evaluate and monitor existing debt for potential savings, to call out high interest coupon bonds and replace them with lower cost borrowing. And finally, we've been monitoring our portfolio of synthetic fixed rate debt. We have a number of series of variable rate debt that we have swapped to fixed that I know the board has had an interest in reducing our exposure to that, the risks associated with those synthetic fixed rate bonds or debt. So our current debt portfolio. Currently, we have about $5 billion of bonds outstanding, of debt outstanding. We have managed to reduce the percentage of synthetic fixed rate debt primarily by not issuing additional variable rate and issuing our new money in the form of fixed rate bonds. The goal that we had established a couple of years ago was to reduce that exposure or that percentage of variable or synthetic fixed rate debt down to 25%. We're currently at 25.9%. And you can see the reduction from 2009, it was 48%, and has been reduced now to 25.9%, with the planned issuance this year of about $800 million of of new bonds to fund our program, we think that exposure will be reduced to about 22% by the end of the year. So we'll be meeting that policy target. And back in 2011, we did have a financial advisor evaluate for us the potential to restructure or refund that synthetic fixed rate debt into traditional fixed rate debt. And their analysis or their recommendation at the time was that if we can restructure or refund from synthetic fixed rate to traditional fixed rate and therefore eliminate some of the risks associated with bank agreements and liquidity renewal, that we should execute those agreements if we could do it at a cost of 50 basis points or less. And that's important as we go forward in terms of evaluating where we are on those issues. With respect to the program, we have issued $1.46 billion, we've issued $1.4 billion of bonds, generating $1.46 billion in proceeds. We've done that at an all-in cost of 4.2% to maturity, so well within our parameters, below the cost of borrowing target that we had. We are expecting to issue $400 million in new bonds in the second quarter of 2015. Those bonds have already been authorized, that $400 million. Today we'll be asking for authorization for some refunding, but the new money issue for the second quarter has already been authorized. We would expect to issue $400 million in the fourth quarter. As indicated here, we have $600 million currently authorized, so we will be seeking additional authorization for new money later this year. With respect to refundings of traditional or fixed rate bonds, this is something that we've been quite active in since the start of 2013. We've refunded almost $960 million of bonds previously issued by the tollway at a savings of $90 million, so 9% of the refunded bonds. So. And then in 2015, we would like to continue that effort. We've already sought and received authorization to use cash to redeem early. The last remaining maturity for the 2005A at a savings of $900,000. And today we're asking for refunding authorization to potentially refund 2008B bonds, $350 million of 2008B. Those bonds have coupons of 5.5%. Under current market conditions, it's actually a little less than this now. We updated the refunding numbers yesterday, but about $32 million estimated savings under current market conditions, and we can talk a little bit more about what we might consider in terms of moving forward with that issue.
The savings are all calculated after fees?
They are. This is really an area, we've had discussions with our financial advisor. Of course, the market changes every day, the savings number fluctuates. It's really kind of a borderline transaction right now with respect to whether we should move forward now or late or wait until later. So that's it's an issue we'd like authorization for, but it's one we would definitely monitor to hopefully hit the market at a slightly improved rates. Management of our synthetic fixed rate bonds. The environment with respect to bank agreements that are necessary to support these synthetic fixed rate bonds, the liquidity agreements that we need to support our variable rate bonds, has improved over time. There seems to be less uncertainty in this market right now. We did the analysis, asked our financial advisor to assist us in doing the analysis with respect to what it would cost us to refund into traditional fixed rate. As you can see, in each case, 98B, 2007A, and 2008A, which are our three major series, We are not quite making the targets. It's actually 80 to 90 basis points for the two big issues, 2007 and 2008. We do have liquidity facilities, bank agreements, that support our variable rate bonds that will be coming due for renewal in the first quarter of 2016. We have three of them that are coming up, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Mizuho. The market for those products remains fairly stable and strong at rates that are equivalent to what we're paying now. We're currently paying between 35 basis points, 0.35% per year, and 0.55% per year for those agreements. That was a significant improvement over the prior, I don't remember it, previous to the last renewal. Some of these agreements were as high as 100 basis points. So we will continue to monitor this, and we are going to go back to our financial advisors and seek their counsel on whether they think that the 50 basis threshold maybe is too conservative with respect to affecting these transactions. That's a summary of what we're looking at and analyzing right now. Do you have questions?
Sure. The 50 basis point, the analysis benefit, there was analysis done by
right.
a firm that came in. They arrived at that 50 basis points. Can you tell us how they got there, or how we got the 50 basis points?
I can give you the short version, and Bill can expand on it if you like. But the approach they really took was to look at what the market was expecting that you should achieve in savings in order to make the decision to do a synthetic fixed rate transaction. So, and then they said they analyzed to be between 40 and 50 basis points. So if you can do a synthetic fixed rate transaction for 40 to 50 basis points lower than the traditional, then you went with the synthetic fixed rate. That's what they believe the market valued that product at, in terms of the savings you would need to take those risks. So in terms of moving back into traditional fixed rate, they said you should be willing to pay that same amount to get back out of it, about 50 basis points. So that's how they analyzed the market, and that's how they came to that recommendation.
So you've got discretion, though. If you see the market shifting dramatically, you've got discretion to go in and make that beyond the 50 basis points, if it's 60, 70, 80 basis points, correct? If you had that discretion? If you see the market shifting quickly, or do you not?
If we see the market, we do have the authorization to do $570 million currently of restructuring of synthetic fixed rate. We would not expect to execute such a transaction unless the cost, remember this is an additional cost, unless the cost was 50 basis points or less. But if we saw that it was 30 or 40 basis points cost as opposed to 50 to move back into traditional fixed rate, then we would certainly be reaching out to you saying, hey, this looks like something that we may want to move forward with soon.
So just to elaborate on Mark's question, the 50 is really just their standard for what would be the right cost savings to be able to go in. It's not about authorization. You have the authorization to do that. It's just that's the trigger in your mind. So if that raises the question of whether the 25% means anything, the goal of the 25%, because what you're saying is what determines your decisions is the cost of the transaction. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the percentage of our debt that we have in synthetic versus standard, right?
The 25% really in part relates to the rating analysis done by the credit rating agencies. Mm-hmm. They have a certain comfort level with the risks as well of synthetic fixed rate debt, and it's been our their comfort level, of course, coming through the financial crisis, has become less than it used to be with respect to variable rate and synthetic fixed rate. So the 25% is our analysis, along with our financial advisors, of what we think the percentage of our debt is that the credit rating agencies would be comfortable with the tollway maintaining.
So really, that has less to do with going back into the market on the synthetics and more to do with how we're planning our future sales. We're just not doing synthetic anymore. Increasingly reducing, that's not in my heart. Increasingly reducing the percentage
right.
of synthetic. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
On the loose fund of the bonds, basically, when you said the present value, now today, I think yesterday was $35 million, today $32 million. When do you make the call on that, as far as whether you go forward on the refund or not?
I think what we would say right now is we would want it to be $35 million or greater. We had discussed this at one point. Rates were... Toward late January, rates were about 30 basis points lower than they are today. And at that time, refunding savings was as much as $40 million for this transaction. This is a transaction where we can't call the bonds until 2018. And so therefore, there's still more than 3 years until the first call date.
So I think one of the things that we would say is getting this authorization is critical so that we can take advantage of those windows in the marketplace that, you know, maybe the week after a board meeting or, you know, at some time that we want to move quickly to take advantage of,
right.
of a window. And we would, you know, with the fluctuations, we may see another window, you know, at some point that gets us above that 35 or above in savings, right?
Yes. I mean, what we're balancing here is the same issue that we've kind of balanced on previous refundings. Long-term interest rates are very low, but we have to invest the money in an escrow and for 3 years until we can pay the bonds off. And the amount that we can earn in the escrow is significantly less than what we're paying on the new bonds. Therefore, we're losing part of our savings, even though it's still a big number, $32 million. We're losing, relative to what we could save, more than $20 million due to the fact that that we're not earning as much in the escrow as the federal regulation would allow us to earn. That sounds worse than it is because we're net still saving 30-some million dollars through affecting the transaction. It's just there are some inefficiencies because of the fact that short-term interest rates are so low that are making it less attractive than it would otherwise be.
On the earnings side.
On the earnings side.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Next, I'm very excited to introduce Paul Kovacs. As excited as I was to introduce Michael, according to computerworld.com, by 2020, about 150 million cars and trucks are going to be connected to the internet via Wi-Fi. 60 to 75% of them will be capable of consuming, creating, or sharing web-based data. The European Commission is striving to have all cars in the EU retrofitted with a device that will automatically inform of accidents or other emergency incidents on the roadway if the driver gets into an accident in the car. And this initiative, they want to have these devices installed by the end of 2018. BMW, Ford, Mercedes, Tesla, and other manufacturers are all focused on connected vehicles, these vehicles that have the ability to connect to the web and consume and create data. So we think that we are uniquely positioned because of our investment in the I-90 corridor as the first smart corridor in the region to be a test bed for some of this new technology and innovation. Connected vehicle technologies are aiming to address what is still the largest concern for everyone when they're driving a car, and that is safety, ultimately, as well as getting to and from where they're going as efficiently and quickly as possible. Connected vehicles, I think you'll find in this presentation, as Paul gives it, provide a tremendous opportunity for unprecedented communication with the driver, but also for the vehicle itself to communicate data back to us. The federal government is actually so interested in this technology that they have created or are creating a pilot program that will fund pilot projects across the United States on connected vehicle technology. They actually have opened it up to the private sector to take the lead, but the tollway is in a unique position to partner with the private sector. And we wanted to let you know that it was our intention, you know, unless the board has some different feedback for us, that we would go ahead and partner with the private sector to pursue this federal opportunity. I personally think that the Jane Addams and these investments that are being made on the Jane Addams, the smart corridor and active traffic management features, are going to open up a world of opportunities even beyond this federal grant in terms of partnerships and the ability for the tollway to leverage these investments for the larger economic benefit of the region. So, Paul, without further ado, I hope I haven't taken too much of your presentation, and you can go ahead and talk to us a little bit about this federal program and the opportunity.
I hope everyone was listening carefully to what you said, because you hit all the highlights.
I know.
And I'm just going to add some more reinforcement to that primary message. So,
yes, thank you.
I'm excited to be here and talk about this federally funded pilot project on connected vehicle technology. And I wanted to recognize two folks, Jonathan Hart. He's sitting right over there. He's with our traffic engineer, CDM Smith. They brought this potential pilot project to our attention. And I also wanted to mention John Benda, our general manager of maintenance and traffic, who is, you know, our in-house champion for smart technology, intelligent transportation systems. And John recognized this when he heard it, that it was a good idea. So I'm fortunate, you know, that I'm working with these two folks. So today's agenda, we're going to talk about building a 21st century corridor on I-90. I'm also going to give you a brief explanation of what connected vehicles are, talk about the federal pilot project opportunity that we have and the next steps. And I've done a presentation on the smart corridor for I-90 before, so you should be a little bit familiar with this. We are doing a $2.5 billion rebuild and widening of the I-90 corridor all the way from O'Hare all the way out to the I-39 Cherry Valley Interchange as part of that project. We did focus on implementing some smart technology in that corridor, especially on the eastern portion, the 25-mile section from Elgin Toll Plaza into the O'Hare. We talked about implementing active traffic management. You know, we have these overhead gantries that we're going to be spacing every half mile along the corridor to communicate with our customers. We've upgraded our fiber optics communications throughout the corridor and our power distribution throughout the corridor. We've upgrading and expanding our roadway camera coverage in the corridor. We're installing state-of-the-art wireless traffic sensors, new roadway weather information systems, and upgraded dynamic message signs. And what that means to the tollway and what we emphasized before is that it's going to give us the capability to provide real-time information to the people who are driving on the road. We know that's going to have an impact on how we manage our incidents that occur on the road, and also it's going to help us implement transit in this corridor, which was another commitment that we made up front. This infrastructure will serve as the technology foundation that's going to enable us to use connected vehicles. So we were aware that connected vehicles and other things were coming down the pipe, so to speak, and we wanted to make sure that the corridor was going to be able to adapt and potentially use some of these new technologies. So what is a connected vehicle? It's an interoperable wireless communication network that provides connectivity between and among vehicles, infrastructure, and wireless devices such as cell phones and other devices. So basically what that is, connected vehicles have the ability to allow cars, trucks, buses, and other vehicles to talk to not only each other, but also talk to roadway infrastructure such as traffic signals and work zones and these gantries on I-90. So connected vehicle technologies aim to tackle the three big challenges that are facing surface transportation industry, and that's safety, mobility, and doing good things for the environment. It's going to allow drivers to have 360 awareness of what's going on around them, even if they can't see what's happening. It's going to allow them to make better choices on their travel so that they can better predict how long it's going to take them to get to where they want to go, and they could link up with other modes of transportation more efficiently and effectively. But really, what I see is one of the hugest benefits. I mean, this technology is going to provide a lot of benefits, but what really is catching my attention is we know there's 30,000 fatalities on the nation's roadways every single year. And in addition, you know, there's 5.6 million crashes occurring, and that is a huge number. And how and what is going to get that number down to zero? And this is one of the technologies that's going to have a huge impact. The federal government thinks this technology could reduce those numbers by 80%. And, you know, that's going to translate into saving lives and reducing congestion on our roadway and have a big environmental impact by eliminating a lot of the congestion we have, which, you know, produces greenhouse gas emissions. So while this vision is a long way off, we know we need to start somewhere. And the tollway wants to put ourselves in a position so that we can realize these benefits of this promising technology. So I wanted to give you just some ideas on what connected vehicle applications could be. The feds have a list in their proposal. There's over 50 of them, but these are some of the examples. You know, with connected vehicles, you can provide curb speed warning, so you can, the drivers can be notified when, you know, there's curves ahead. Spot weather impact warning, reduced speed and work zone warning, so they can notify drivers while they're on the road that they're approaching work zones. We think it's going to have a huge impact on incident scene pre-arrival staging, so we can better get our emergency responders to the site of an incident. Incident scene work zone alerts, so now the people while they're on the incident scene can be notified if there's a vehicle approaching that appears to be, you know, out of control or driving too fast. Cue warning, it'll give notices to drivers when there's backup traffic ahead. And really this whole idea of an enabled advanced traveler information system, just being able to share all this data with people while they're in their cars and driving to help them make better choices in real time. So we have this federal pilot project opportunity. This RFP from the feds came out at the end of January. I think it was January 31st, actually. The Federal Highway Administration had issued the request for proposals on this connected vehicle pilot program. The goal of the pilot is to encourage the testing and development of connected vehicle technology that, if successful, can be deployed within the next 4 to 5 years. I mentioned there are several connected vehicle applications, over 50 of them. We do expect the FHWA to make multiple awards. The awards could vary between $2 million and $20 million each. The FHWA has specifically indicated that they want the effort to be led by the private sector, but they want them to partner with other public partners and other stakeholders. For this effort, the tollway was approached by representatives from our traffic engineer. I mentioned CDM Smith. On behalf of their federal affiliate office, which is CDM Smith Federal, they're going to take the lead on developing the proposed technical approach, assembling a multidisciplinary team, and developing the proposal. And we're going to coordinate closely with them, you know, to make sure that it's proceeding in a manner that, you know, we feel it will be useful for us. We think the tollway is a very strong candidate for the pilot for a number of reasons. We have demonstrated that we are committed to smart technology. Obviously, that's what we're doing on I-90. The Illinois Tollway is registered as a federally affiliated testbed. There aren't many agencies that are registered. We wanted to do this early on so that we could participate in these FHWA meetings that they were having, and they would share information with us and data with us so that we could be informed of this technology as they were developing it. We're one of only two toll roads that are registered as a federally affiliated test bed. And we've demonstrated that we have really good partnerships with other public entities, you know, such as the RTA and PACE and the universities that we work with. So, you know, that we feel also is putting us in a good position to be selected. We have a commitment to CV technology. We have proven success in delivering large capital programs, and we have strong partnerships with public and private sector. That should put the tollway in a good position to receive, you know, some notice on selection for this proposal and hopefully allow us to benefit from this new technology. These are some of the partnerships that we've been considering, and CDM Smith has been kind of leading the charge on for us. We're thinking of regional and local transportation and transit agencies such as PACE and the RTA. We're also considering first responders such as local police, fire, and emergency management agencies, universities, and other academic institutions. We have, and we're fortunate with our huge program, we have a lot of consultants with national expertise right here working for us right now that we can also partner with. And, you know, we also recognize that CDM Smith is going to engage some DBE partners in this effort, too. These are the basic next steps that we have to follow, and we're on a really tight time frame here. You know, the proposal came out January 31st. The submittals are due March 16th. Therefore, the team has less than a month really to complete this process. So in the coming days and weeks, CDM Smith Federal, the tollway, and our partners in the public and private sector are going to develop an approach and decide how we're going to submit it to the FHWA. I do want to point out that the tollway and the public sector partners are going to be consulted and engaged throughout the whole process. But the cost isn't going to be borne by the tollway. The cost is going to, for this whole proposal effort, is going to be borne by CDM Smith and also the other private entities that we partner with. We will, of course, have to dedicate some staff time, you know, to provide guidance and input on the proposal, but that's really the limit of our exposure here. They will most likely be seeking a letter of commitment from the tollway, so that's really what we want your approval on today is, you know, if we do get selected and are, you know, fortunate enough to be considered for this, you know, will you allow the tollway to participate in the program? This is the overall schedule for the program. So this planning phase is going to occur through 2015 and 16. If chosen, we expect the entire process from planning to transition to permanent operation, if the technology is deemed to be successful, to take up to 4 years and be fully operational on the tollway system and available for our customers. So it's a pretty long time frame, and it does have phases that we have to go through. But as I mentioned, this initial phase, we develop the planning and concept, and they will evaluate it, and they will decide whether or not they want us to move forward with it. And I think one of the things that, you know, captured my attention in the literature that I had reviewed on connected vehicle technology, and it kind of shows how we're shifting in the way that we're thinking about transportation, and also how, you know, the engineering community has approached it. So the U.S. has spent the last 50 years developing our roads and our vehicles to kind of make sure that people can survive accidents in their cars while they're driving. And the next 50 years, we're actually going to be investigating and looking at this technology that's going to allow people to avoid these accidents altogether. So I'm excited about this opportunity. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
The Jane Adams is probably the place where you would start with the rebuilding, reconstruction in that area, or how do you implement that, the infrastructure within the roadway?
So that's what we're thinking right now. Because we're implementing all these upgrades to our fiber optic communication system in that corridor, also upgrading all of our power there. We're going to have these overhead gantries that are going to be equipped. We're going to have full camera coverage in that corridor. That probably will be the highlight of our proposal to the FHWA. I think there's, you know, potentially future applications in other corridors that we're working on. You know, we have work continuing on the Elgin O'Hare, and then we have the Central Tri-State coming in 2020.
Do you believe the federal grant will cover the majority of the cost to implement the program?
That's what I really like about it. We're not going to really have a lot of cost exposure on this program. The grants, the way I understand it, could be between $2 and $20 million. At the end, you know, once we fully developed and implemented it, if we're successful in coming up with something that really does work and behave the provide the benefits that we want, we will have to maintain it going on from that point. So that'll be after 2019 probably.
I don't mean this in any way disrespectfully, even to either to our partners or to the federal government, but Mark sort of asked the question in one way, what is really the cost-benefit analysis on this? We may save some money in setting it up, to play devil's advocate here. On the other hand, we'll be dealing with a lot of partners, some federal expectations and guidelines, and probably regulations and expectations. Just for sake of argument, why, since we've got this infrastructure built in, since we have CDW as one of our partners anyway, why wouldn't we just forget the federal government, unless it's a massive amount of money, and just design this and do it ourselves?
I think that's a good point. I really don't mean it disrespectfully at all.
I'm just curious.
I think we don't have all the answers. And I think this whole program is designed so that the feds want this to be developed, and they're willing to pay for it up front to determine what things and what aspects of the program are going to be the most beneficial and successful. So that's really what the pilot program is about. So if we did not avail ourselves of this program, then we might have to spend $20 million ourselves just to figure out, you know, what's most useful to us.
So maybe I just don't understand well enough what the there is there, what the concrete part of this. I hear the general discussion, you know, we're making things safer, we're making travel faster, but what would be the actual, and I don't want you to give away, if we shouldn't give away what the specifics are, because we haven't designed it, we haven't talked to our partners yet, but give us if you can, just a made up example of what it is that we would be testing, that we would need federal resources to test, that we wouldn't already have thought about testing anyway.
I tried to cover like some of the practical aspects of it. So we know that this technology is not widely implemented in vehicles yet.
Right.
So that's one key component. So we'd like to see that technology get developed. I did read in some of the research that they are coming up with systems that could be retrofitted into any vehicle so that it could use it. We'd want to see that happen on a, you know, deployed nationwide. I think that the more vehicles that have this technology, probably the better it works, because it does rely on short-range communications. So you can get notices on things on the road from both vehicles traveling with you and vehicles traveling in the opposite direction of you.
So this would be about investing in individual vehicles. You mentioned some companies that were already doing this. I can't get from the general to the specific what they might get spent for.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
No, it's not out of line, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you. It's a very young technology, and it's difficult to say exactly how it will be implemented. That's part of what this pilot is about, is defining how this can be implemented, how it can benefit obviously, the federal government is interested in how it can benefit the nation. We're interested in how it can benefit totally and our planning partners in the region. Investing in individual vehicles is part of a very long-term approach. Manufacturers are beginning to invest in technology and have even made commitments to start putting similar technology into vehicles to allow this in the near future. But there's no standard yet. The federal government is developing that standard, so it's coming along. But what the federal government wants to do is really jumpstart this process by taking the risk out of it, at least for the public agencies, by putting the risk on the private sector. The private sector is willing to take that risk because this is work that we want to be involved in the future. We're not talking about outfitting individual vehicles in terms of private citizen vehicles at this point. We may in the future, but that's very difficult to do, to get people to adopt that technology, to allow it in their vehicles. One of the things that we feel that the tollway has going for it is that we have very high ICAST penetration, and people are already used to having technology in their car and willing to accept the benefits of that technology for any trade-offs there may be. We may outfit fleet vehicles. We may outfit PACE buses. We may outfit other partner agency fleet vehicles. Those are the easiest initial targets because we approve and control what goes into these vehicles. In the future, could we potentially partner with auto manufacturers? Certainly. There will be a national standard at some point. Auto manufacturers and the industry itself is going to take off on its own simply because there's potentially a lot of money in this. One of the questions I heard you asking is, you know, what would concrete benefits, but more specifically, what would be a concrete example of a deployment on the tollway be? Is that correct?
Yes. That was going to be my next question.
And again, this is something that we're currently discussing with tollway and our public sector partners to determine what exactly this deployment would look like. And I don't want to sound wishy-washy on this, but there's a lot to define, and it's a very broad field. I can pose an example, but I don't want to imply in any way that this is to imply policy or to dictate policy, or it is even something that we're going to do. But we can imagine a technology that would provide, as Paul mentioned earlier, that would provide advanced warning to, say, a breakdown, a vehicle that's stalled in a lane. You can provide advanced warning to back to our TIM center. We can provide advanced warning to drivers on the road. We can provide advanced warning to our health vehicles that there is a breakdown on the side of the road. When we go to managing our lanes through active traffic management, we can use the same technology to help our own people automate this process and get the information they need. Does a lane need to be shut down? Do we need to shift traffic? These are all possible means of deployment, but again, this is not something I've discussed with the tollway enough that, you know, I'm very hesitant. I don't want to commit anything.
The applications are due in March, right?
That's correct, March 16th.
Right, so, you know, some of it is still under development, but
correct.
I think another portion of this is we know that we're already going to be getting a great deal of data from this corridor because of all of the technology features. What do you do with all of that? How do you make sense of it? What does it mean in terms of your operations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there, I'm assuming will be a data analytics component as well that would be helpful to the federal government, which is why they're interested, right? Because if they're thinking about deploying this, or if not mandating it, encouraging it in other parts of the country, they're going to want to be able to see what are the benefits. How does this manage traffic flow? Does this, you know, make for safer travel conditions, et cetera? So what we can do is once the application is submitted, we can certainly come back. We don't anticipate, the beauty of having a private sector lead is that as far as those kind of risks of, you know, the federal government and the regulations and the oversight, a lot of that will be borne, the majority of it will be borne by the lead partner mm-hmm. that's making the grant application. So we don't have to, you know, whenever you accept federal funds or other things, there are reporting requirements and other things that the tollway is not as accustomed to because we don't make them regularly, but that would be something that we would see the private sector partner being responsible for.
Well, so that's why we brought in our federal group as well. They're accustomed to dealing with these things. We can provide a risk assessment in terms of what may potentially be required of the tollway, but again, the intent is that risk and those requirements are placed on the private sector. The involvement of the tollway is to help guide us to produce a technology that is beneficial to the tollway. That's the primary, that's one of the primary benefits here, is that that's not something that the tollway will need to deal with. And I just want to clarify one thing. The federal government is very, very particular on this. This is not a grant. It's